All right, hi everybody. Welcome back to NeuroQol and our series of podcasts. Really delighted to be with you. I'm Dr. Charlie Whiffin, and with me today are Brandon and Santani. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
The ladies first.
I always go first.
Santani.
Okay. I'm Santani. I'm the research fellow in public health with the NIHR group on trauma.
And I'm Brendan, one of the PhD students in the group as well.
Brilliant. So this week, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Kathleen Koo, who is a neurosurgeon from the Philippines. And the reason why we reached out to Kate to do a podcast was she's written a really lovely editorial for the Journal of Neurosurgery about qualitative research in brachial plexus injury. And it's just a really nice editorial about why neurosurgeons should be using qualitative methods. So in the interview itself, we talk a little bit about her experience of qualitative research and getting interested in qualitative methods, and why she thinks it's of value to neurosurgery. So we will let you listen to the interview and we will chat again once it's finished. All right. Okay. Right. Well, let's get started. So thank you very much, Kate, for joining me today to do this podcast for NeuroQol. Really excited to talk to you about you and your experiences of qualitative research. So let's start by, could you please introduce yourself and explain how you first became interested in qualitative research?
Okay. So hello, everyone. My name is Kate, and I'm a neurosurgeon from the Philippines. My specialty is surgical neuro-oncology and peripheral nerve surgery, and I did my fellowship training in Singapore and Canada. When I was in Canada, I was privileged to train under Dr. Mark Bernstein in Toronto for neuro-oncology, and he was the one who got me interested in qualitative research. He had already published several papers on the subject by then, and he involved me in some of his research projects. That's how I got started. And I've been a fan of qualitative research ever since.
Lovely, thank you. So what first got you, I mean, I know you were working with Dr. Mark Bernstein, but what were your first impressions of qualitative? What did you first think about when you were introduced to the field?
Well, most of the research I was exposed to until that point was quantitative research or the scientific method, because that was taught in college, in medical school, even in residency. So qualitative research was something a bit different, but I quickly learned to appreciate it because it was able to study certain aspects of medicine that were not covered by quantitative research.
And you said that you hadn't really had that exposure before in your training. So coming to it completely new, did you immediately like the idea of qualitative research, or did you have any reservations about it?
Well, to be honest, I didn't take it very seriously because it seemed a bit more more like something that a layman would write rather than a scientist. Mm-hmm. But I learned that it's not as easy as it looks. So there's a lot of, I had to read a book about it and read several papers before I got the hang of it. Because if you read the paper, it looks easy. The finished product looks easy, but all the thinking behind it is actually quite technical.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a really, really good point. Actually, when it's good qualitative research, it looks easy. There's kind of like a simplicity in its eloquence quite often, isn't there? And
yes.
on the face of it, it looks like all we do is sit down and have a chat with some people, come up with some themes, and that's it. And that idea, like we said, it's kind of like from a layman's perspective, and it was very contrasted quite significantly against the scientific method.
But actually, when you learn about it, it's really, really hard to do, certainly to do well, yes. and to get the best out of qualitative research.
Yeah, I was actually more anxious to write my first qualitative research paper than the usual paper that requires scientific method, because I was out of my element. This is something I wasn't formally trained to do, unlike the scientific method, which was taught in school. So I was very anxious about it, and I second guessed myself and wasn't quite sure if I was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting. I think that anxiety around qualitative research, you know, and I think that's right, that if you've had an education which has brought you up with the, you know, brought you up within the scientific method, to do something completely new and then to be judged in that field, you know, second guessing yourself that you've done it correct. And I still second guess myself, you know, still in analysis, I'm still reached that point where I think, oh, I'm not doing this right. Is this right? Am I sure this is right? Even though I'm following the process. And I think it's very hard to feel really secure in qualitative research, because there isn't a formula which takes you to the answer. There is always a human being in the middle of that analytical process, processing the data. And that's really difficult.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did you get to a place where you started to feel more confident? You know, who did you look to, or were there any resources or people that guided you? How did you get to a place where you felt kind of comfortable, like in that, writing that manuscript and doing that qualitative research?
Well, first, my mentor asked me to read some books and some of the work he did, the Finnish articles. Mm-hmm. So I tried to figure out the process from how did you go from the interviews to getting the themes, extracting the data, and then coming up with the themes, and then putting it all together into a seamless manuscript. Mm-hmm. So I had to study that process. And of course, once the draft was written, my mentor also helped me refine the themes and the writing. Mm. So that's how I started. Yeah.
And I think that there's a real art to writing qualitative research. I think, far more than there is in quantitative, where you have your statistical results. But I think there's like a craftsmanship in writing out the themes to convey that.
Yes, I agree, because in quantitative it's more like technical writing. Mm. So there's a formula, a template to follow, and then you just follow that template, and it doesn't have, I mean, it has to be grammatically correct, of course, and all that, but you're right, there's a bit more art and skill needed to write the qualitative research paper.
Mm. And I like what you said about drawing on, you know, experts to support the process. And I think it's quite interesting that when we do quantitative research and we do complex statistical analysis, you know, even when we write funding applications, there's always a bit in there where it says, have you consulted a statistician? Because the statistician will then go through your analysis for you and help you make sure you've applied the right statistical test to the right data. But you don't get that in qualitative research, where, you know, have you consulted an expert in qualitative research? And I think that's probably something that might be of benefit, you know, with researchers speaking to experts in qualitative research to guide them through that process. I don't know what you think about that.
I think it's a great idea. But unlike quantitative research, you come up with the hypothesis first, right? You have a research design that the statistician can check before you start the project. But what's different with qualitative research is you go ahead and then the ideas emerge from the study. Mm-hmm. So you don't, there's no preconceived notion when you start. It's mm-hmm. like you start with a blank slate, and then whatever themes come up, you have to refine them and explore them. Mm-hmm. And so it would be helpful to have a guide, somebody to guide you during key steps in the process. But unlike in quantitative,
where the guide is only as mainly at the start before you start the project. Mm. Here, I think you would need a guide in the middle.
Mm, that's a really, really good point. Really good point. Yeah. So let's take us on to talking about your editorial in the Journal of Neurosurgery, which is a really beautiful editorial. It's really, really lovely, well written. So how did you come to write that editorial? It was the editorial Qualitative Research in Brachial Plexus Injury.
Yeah. Well, thanks for reading it and for the compliment. So when I finished my training in Toronto, I went to Calgary to do a fellowship training in peripheral nerve surgery under Dr. Raj Mida, my co-author in the editorial. Mm-hmm. Because of my experience in Toronto, he wanted us to do qualitative research on patients with carpal tunnel syndrome in Calgary. And we learned a few things from the study that we didn't know before. And I'll give some examples later. Anyway, fast forward a few years, and JNS, or Journal of Neurosurgery, invited us to write an editorial about qualitative research in brachial plexus injury in response to an excellent qualitative research paper that was submitted to the journal. And that's how the editorial came about.
Mm-hmm. Great. And have you had much discussion through that editorial? I mean, does qualitative research, does it feature significantly in the Journal of World Neurosurgery?
You mean, are there a lot of qualitative research papers in the journal itself?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, I would say not a lot. Although they did publish a couple, one of which was written by myself along with Dr. Bernstein and my colleagues in Toronto in the time when I was a fellow. But mostly, I think it's quantitative research.
Mm-hmm.
Qualitative research is still in the minority among the neurosurgical journals available,
mm-hmm.
but they're quite open-minded. And if you submit a paper that has a good design, it's well-written, it has merits, then they would judge it based on the merits. So that's they're really open-minded that way. Yeah,
that's really good to know. So I think there's possibly, so I agree with you in what I've seen in the neurosurgical journals, there's very little qualitative research in those. And that's not that the editorial policy is to exclude qualitative research. There's very much the opposite of that. They, you know, from what I've seen, that they do welcome well-written manuscript, qualitative manuscript. So that suggests then that not a lot of qualitative research is being done in neurosurgery because those manuscripts aren't making it, you know, into neurosurgery journals. So then what do you think qualitative research has to offer the neurosurgical evidence base?
Well, I firmly believe that as a doctor, one should not only treat the illness, but the patient in his entirety. I think that being able to put oneself into the patient's shoes and be more sensitive to their needs would make one a better doctor. Mm. Certainly, performing a successful surgery would relieve the symptoms and take care of the problem. But being aware of their other needs, for example, information, would make them happier and more satisfied with their care. As neurosurgeons, we are trained to use deductive reasoning and apply the scientific method to everything. The research that we are most familiar with and by which we set great store is quantitative research, as we discussed a bit earlier. And this orientation is reflected in the medical literature, which is inundated with papers about the scientific method. However, medicine is not just a science, but also an art.
Mm.
Quantitative research can certainly answer the science questions, but cannot adequately address the art aspect. And that's where qualitative research comes in.
Mm.
Qualitative research is meant to complement quantitative research and not compete with it.
Mm-hmm.
Its value lies in areas where insight may not be well established or where conventional theories seem inadequate. Adding qualitative to quantitative research may result in findings that are broader in scope and richer in meaning.
Mm.
It can address questions that are not answerable by quantitative research, such as questions about individuals' motivations, perceptions, and expectations, can be used to gain insight into social, emotional, and experiential phenomena in healthcare. For example, the meaning of illness to the patient and his family. It can produce information that could be used to improve the quality of care of patients and can investigate physicians and patients' attitudes, beliefs, and preferences. Lastly, it provides information about the human or social aspect of an issue, helping us understand a given situation or health phenomenon in its entirety. So for neurosurgery, some of the applications for qualitative research include patient perceptions on various illnesses or conditions, exploring ethical issues, and studying certain aspects of residency training, such as burnout. Mm. It can also be used for policy and program evaluation. The bottom line is neurosurgeons and patients are people, and they cannot be defined by numbers and tables and graphs alone. So qualitative research can be used to explore the thoughts and feelings that are beyond the scope of quantitative research. Since neurosurgeons are results-oriented, let me give some examples of the practical utility that qualitative research can provide. One example is patient feedback regarding information needs. Knowing the type of information that patients value would guide us on what to include or emphasize during clinic visits. For example, during the carpal tunnel study, we found that patients wanted to know more about what to expect during the recovery process and not much about the surgery itself and the timeline for any improvements. So we made it a point to talk about these topics with subsequent patients. In another study, we found that brain surgery patients wanted to hear directly from the surgeon and not the assistant about the findings during surgery. So we made it a point to talk to the patient about that, even if it's already the day after, because the patient may still be groggy after the surgery, because doing this gives them closure. These issues may seem unimportant to us because we are mostly concerned about the problem and how to fix it, but they are important to our patients. And if we address them, it would improve patient satisfaction. Another application of patient feedback is to provide practical suggestions for better procedures or improvement of existing practices. Patients told us that they could not remember post-op instructions very well, so we provided them with more detailed written instructions when they went home. All of these may seem trivial, but when you add them all up, they would have a huge impact on improving patient care. Neurosurgeons may also be wondering if the findings of one study may be generalizable to the rest of the population. It's true that one small group cannot be representative of the whole. However, what we're studying here are concepts and their relationships, so they should be applicable to a similar group of people in similar conditions.
Lovely. That's so eloquently put. Thank you very much. I think what I really take from that is the idea that the evidence base is a jigsaw puzzle of different pieces. And actually, the scientific method is excellent at doing what it does and answering particular research questions. But actually, it doesn't answer all the research questions that are important to us as human beings. And that, you know, illness is a journey, not a destination. And if you only focus on the destination, you miss so much more in that patient pathway, where you have the opportunity to, like you said, to increase patient satisfaction, to improve their overall experience, and, you know, to address what actually matters to the patient, and to kind of emphasize that kind of person-centered care approach. What do you think of that? Is that right?
Yes, you put it very well.
I think there's scope for different people to add different bits to the evidence base, and increasing that amount of qualitative research just to improve that patient perspective. There's definitely room in the evidence base for that. So how can we encourage neurosurgeons to conduct qualitative research, do you think?
Well, qualitative research involves a radically different way of thinking from what we were traditionally taught about the research process, but I'm confident that neurosurgeons will see the beauty and utility of this particular research tool once they know more about it. As a matter of fact, I think neurosurgeons are already conducting some form of qualitative research in their day-to-day activities, except they don't think of it as research. When you make an observation and form a conclusion from it, that's already a basic form of qualitative research, if you'll agree. So going back to the question, I think neurosurgeons can be encouraged to conduct qualitative research using these means, raising awareness, mentorship, and practical gains. First and foremost is the exposure. For me personally, I wasn't aware of the existence of qualitative research until I was doing my fellowship. It was just not in my vocabulary. So neurosurgeons need to be exposed to it and learn about its utility. The ideal time would be during university and medical school, but that is beyond our control at the moment. Another method would be informing them or calling their attention to the existence of qualitative research in your surgery, like what you're doing with your website and podcasts and research papers. This would raise awareness about the topic, although at present it seems more like a niche market rather than mainstream. Second is mentorship. Having a mentor to guide you through the process helps a lot, and that is how I got my start. In return, I also teach my trainees about qualitative research to pay it forward. Third is practical gain. The practical reasons for doing any type of research include applicability and publishability. If the findings result in a favorable change in practice, the researcher would be encouraged. So it is important for people to have an open mind and be receptive to new ideas. As for publishability, I'm happy to say that the various neurosurgery journals are quite open-minded about the topic, and we touched on this earlier, and they judge the paper according to the research design and the merits, like they do with quantitative research. So there is a market for these types of studies. So in summary, I would say raising awareness, mentorship, and using practical means, practical gains as the means to entice neurosurgeons into doing qualitative research.
Lovely. It's a good way of finishing. I like the idea of enticing neurosurgeons to come and do qualitative research. And I think being inspired by people, you know, working with people working with people who, you know, are passionate about qualitative methodology, you know, it can inspire and it can entice, and just being kind of, I can tell, I'm sure your residents enjoy working with you and feeling inspired by you, and just being an advocate for qualitative and try and move it out of what you say, like this niche market, and move it. I mean, whether it'll ever be mainstream, but, you know, to be within the mainstream and to be part of mixed method research designs or larger projects which complement, you know, wider quantitative work, so that the product that the change in practice is not just a kind of narrow change, it's a wider change that incorporates that patient perspective and patient views. So it's much more kind of acceptable and just improves that patient-centered care at the end of it. So that's all my questions, really. It's been brilliant talking to you today. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we close the session?
No, I think we've covered most of it. I really like what you said about the illness being a journey, not the destination, because I agree, it's not. I mean, sometimes doctors are just fixated on the outcome. They don't really care what happens in between, but the patients are actually more, well, not all, but a lot of them are concerned about the journey itself. And sometimes they're not that happy with the outcome because the journey was not to their liking. So,
exactly.
So that's a good perspective.
Right. Well, I hope I'm sure this session will inspire some people and given some good ideas and good insight into qualitative research. So thank you so much for doing this for me today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Charlie.
All right. So welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that interview. It was certainly really nice meeting Kate. I found the interview really inspiring and uplifting. So what did you think, Santani?
Yes, and I think what's really striking about what she says, I mean, she says lots of very interesting things, obviously, is that the fact that when she started off, it really wasn't that easy. It looks easy on paper, qualitative paper, you think, they're just chatting, you know, like what she said. Just have a couple of quotes, throw a couple of quotes here and there and box your uncle, you know, that's it. It's not like how we have to go through all the statistics and decide which test to use and so on. But it's not. And I like the fact that she said that it's the thinking behind it is very technical. That makes it not just I'm chatting to people. It's not a chatting to people method of research. It has its own merit.
Yeah. And I think what's nice is to hear from somebody who's kind of grown up with the scientific, like positivistic approach, you know, clinical trials and, you know, that kind of education, to then have the kind of world of qualitative research opened up for her was a really steep learning curve. And I love the kind of honesty around how scared she was to kind of write her first qualitative manuscript, because it's so different to what she would be more familiar with and comfortable with. What did you think, Bran?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's almost like writing in a, I'd say for me, when I started first writing, it's like a different language.
Yeah.
Because you've still got the same headings, you've still got the same sort of general concepts in qualitative as you have in quantitative, but it's just framed a lot differently. I think methods to qualitative research is something quite a lot different, you know, from everything from the terminology to the amount of depth that you need to go into. I mean, in a standard study, you could probably happily write down your quantitative methods in a few paragraphs and be done with it, because it's all recognized. You don't need to explain what an RCT is or something. But for qualitative, I think, you know, you could write a whole manuscript on your methods, you know, and publish that separately as a protocol before you dive in. And even then you still run out of words for what you did. It's quite a long process, but again, it's all about bringing that richness from the data and framing it again.
Yeah, like you say, it's like learning a different language. It really is. And I think even as someone so I've kind of grown up with qualitative methods, and you know, my PhD was qualitative, but I think the natural language that we use in common culture is normally quite scientific. So people generally understand the concept of bias or the concept of generalizability or validity. Even if they don't know the technical definition for those things, they can kind of understand it. But qualitative is so different from that. You have to understand how that concept is applied in a similar way, but not in the same way in qualitative research. And I think, you know, that kind of advice about working with experts and working with people who know about qualitative research, I think it's really sage advice, because it's only really when you surround yourselves with other people who are speaking the same language, speaking that language, can you really kind of immerse yourself and understand the true kind of interpretation of those particular things. What do you think?
Exactly, that's just it. You know, she talked about how you know, you have statisticians to check your work and make sure you're doing the right thing, but I think the same should apply to qualitative as well. You know, why just because you don't have a designated title of a qualitative statistician or whatever you want to call
analyst.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that doesn't apply to qualitative research. And I think the other thing which was sort of struck me, and being a medic myself, is that, you know, how medics, especially having been trained in Asia myself as well, we don't have a lot of exposure to qualitative. And I completely understand what she was talking about, that it's only when I came to the UK that I started to learn about qualitative research, and it's actually such a thing, and how important it is in medicine in general and in neurosurgery as well, because a lot of people think that it's just for the social scientists and the possibly the public health people, you know, they are the ones who do qualitative research. But that's not true. I mean, she gives such I felt like very, very strong reasons why this should be part of the medical school training, especially in her context. Yeah.
I think that exposure is really important. And I think trying to, if you only give qualitative research over to like other disciplines, like social scientists, then you never really, it's never really embedded into your own professional culture. And I think that's, I think it is really important then that neurosurgeons don't just leave qualitative research for other people to do. It becomes part of the overall toolkits of all neurosurgeons. You know, you have this research question, needs this approach. You have that research question, it needs that approach. So we're only limiting yourself to half of the toolkit that's available for research questions means that you're kind of shutting out that side of inquiry altogether. And that's got to be a detriment in the long run to the evidence base. And I think that's what kind of Kate was saying. Any other thoughts?
I think it's interesting what she's saying about the sort of the empathy is the right word of journals to manuscripts, because I think it really is quite one of those experiences where it will vary, because I mean my experience of neurosurgery journals is there isn't much qualitative research in them yet. And if there is, they tend to be journals of a bit more of a wider global focus, you know, open access policy sort of throughout. I mean, I don't know if it's it's just my luck and just coincidence, but I think most qualitative papers I've seen have been open access, which is surprising. But I think there's still a lot of work for journals, not just neurosurgery ones, but a lot of journals in surgery as a whole to start including and being a bit more aware of the qualitative methods and how they can sort of publish it, I suppose. Coming back to think about word limits again.
Yeah, it's really difficult, isn't it? Because it's a bit like you're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Like if you, and I see this with student work, you know, if you give somebody, an unended word limit, they never use that word limit correctly. You know, they just kind of waffle on, you know, regardless, and it becomes really unfocused. And actually, if you restrict people and say, no, you must do it in 2,000 words or 3,000 words, it makes people distill their discussion right down to the bare bones of what is required. But there kind of needs to be some kind of middle ground between those things. So I think trying to get a quality, I mean, we know this, Brandon, trying to get a qualitative manuscript into 2,000 words simply so that it would go into a neurosurgery journal, it's almost impossible. Or if it is possible, it rips the heart and soul out of the manuscript because it is so focused that actually part of, for me anyway, part of publishing qualitative research is the communicative power of it. So it should leave a residue with you, you know, like it kind of has this lasting, or a good paper should have this lasting kind of impact of, God, I really like what they said. I hadn't thought about it like that. And that's where it's powerful. And I think when you strip qualitative right back to the bare bones, it loses that ability to really connect with the reader, because there's something really missing from it. But then if you increase the word count simply for qualitative research, lots of journals don't want, you know, neurosurgery journals specifically really don't want you to do that because they are focused on really short manuscripts. You know, what is the problem? What was the solution? What's your main recommendation for practice? And that's all they're really interested in. So, it's really hard to get a qualitative manuscript to a purely neurosurgery, you know, neurosurgeon focused audience without stripping out all the stuff, then the complex stuff that we do. I read something by Brown and Clark recently that was advocating for longer journal word limits for qualitative research, especially in medicine. So we can be allowed to do that complex, or show that complex working out and show those complex findings.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder whether, if looking back at qualitative papers and things like reviews, whether there is more, I mean, if if qualitative publishing is almost like a word-saving exercise to fit it in a journal, I do wonder whether there's a way to report the things that could be fairly standard in, you know, across papers. You know, is there like a Prisma kind of chart for your methods to report things like rigor, and you know, how you can demonstrate that there's value to it to anyone who's interested, I suppose. I do wonder if there's some framework out there that, you know, you can present that so it is a little bit more applicable to these journals that haven't yet adapted their guidelines.
That's really tricky, is it? Because then you come back to the idea of maybe like, well, we've got reporting checklists, don't we, for qualitative research. We've got COREC anyway. But then in addition to that, would you have like a tick box of what you didn't include or what you didn't do? And then you reduce qualitative research down to a tick box exercise. And we know that that's not something that we should be doing. And we know that different methods are applied differently in different methodology. And that's also the really complex area of qualitative research is, you know, it's such a broad church with so many different methods that we do apply things differently in different settings. And one thing would be, we were talking today, San, about inter-rater reliability for coding, and whereas in one method that would be totally acceptable, actually for most methods it's not acceptable. So for a reviewer, you would have to be able to unpick what type of, you know, whether in this manuscript that's something that the author should have done or shouldn't have done, and how do you distill that piece of advice down to a one sentence thing that could be ticked against? So difficult. And that's why I think we end up with so many kind of generic appraisal tools for qualitative research, because if you, on a generic sense, you can kind of, these are broadly what you should be doing, and that kind of works. But as soon as you start digging down into the detail, we all do something slightly differently. So it's really, really difficult. Anything else that struck you about Kate's interview?
I think it's like the fact that she sort of makes everything very practical. So like, it doesn't become just a theoretical exercise of doing a qualitative study. There's, you know, like why she talks about art and science to it. It's not just I'm doing it because Charlie said I have to do it, or because I'm in this group and they all want neurosurgeons to do quality. It's actually understanding that how it really can make a difference to your patient care. In a neurosurgical context, that is. And I mean, her examples were really good. I think she talked about getting the feedback from patients, and it's not just using those surveys that go, were you happy? Yes, smiley face, frowny face. To them, yeah, the fact that they actually had, I suppose, in-depth interviews with patients to really get, to understand what their needs are or were at that point in time, and how that would actually transform their service. So it's not just to get your paper published, it's actually to make a difference in a patient's life.
Definitely, that's so important. And I think if we think about one of the other things, if we think about one of the kind of characteristics of qualitative inquiry, it's like reducing the power differential between the participant and the researcher. And if you put that in a clinical context, that's quite often between the neurosurgeon and the patient. And hierarchically, you know, patients are quite commonly in complete awe of neurosurgeons. And I see that as a nurse myself, where patients just say yes, no, and thank you, and then ask me, what did they say? What am I supposed to do now? And actually, I think partly with qualitative methods, it's that opportunity to sit and listen and to actually value the inside perspective of the people that you're supposed to be helping. And that can be quite empowering in itself. And something that Kate was saying was about not being completely fixated on the outcome, but to be considering the journey. And sometimes you might get the outcome right, but the journey horribly, horribly wrong. And actually, that's what the patient remembers. So it's important to see all the elements kind of come together in healthcare. So qualitative methods, I think, are part of that overall story of trying to impact and improve patient care, isn't it? All right. So anything, any kind of final comments that you'd like to make?
No, just thinking back to the Einstein quote, just got Neuroco open at the moment, about not everything that counts can be counted. I think that's sort of summarizes qualitative research quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've really enjoyed chatting about Kate's interview. I hope all of our listeners have enjoyed listening to Kate as well. I would recommend looking up her editorial and also some of her qualitative examples that she talked about in the interview. We will link to some of those on Twitter as well, and make sure that you've got access to those. So thank you so much for joining us for one of our NeuroQual podcasts, and I hope to join you again soon for another one.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.